Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my main man, Josh, coming out of Ottawa.
What's up?
What's going on, man? We're going to keep our division previews rolling today. We're going to the most interesting division in the West. We're going to the Northwest. Just for clarity's sake for everyone, we're recording on September 28th, around like 3:30. So nothing has happened with Jimmy Butler yet, except just constant drama with the situation. I want to start in Denver, though. I want to start in the Rockies, start off nice and high with the mountains, because this team has a lot of potential.
I thought you were going to say something entirely different. Nice and high in Denver, huh?
Of course. No, oh, yeah. No jabs. No jabs. Come on.
Hopefully Jamal Murray's not getting high right now.
Nah, man. Jamal Murray is training. He's got those training videos.
The sure. Ones that Damian Lillard are making fun of.
Exactly. He's got Nerf guns and everything. All right, so Denver picked up Isaiah Thomas, which is kind of an interesting play. They also drafted Michael Porter Jr. at number 14. We all know that he was a huge recruit coming out of high school, but what was it, the last year he had to sit out because of a back injury?
Yeah, he just had surgery as well, so he's probably going to be out the entire season.
Yeah, that's a shame, but I don't know, let's rest him and get him ready for next year. They also re-signed Will Barton and Nikola Jokic, so the core is coming back. But we also lost out on a couple of veterans. Jarrell Arthur, Kenneth Faried, Devin Harris, and my main man, Wilson Chandler. This team got a lot younger this summer. That's like a bunch of 30-year-olds that they unloaded.
Yeah, like I don't really want to start you off and, you know, make you really angry to start off the podcast, but Wilson Chandler did not play well last year. Let's just be honest. And yet, you look at their depth chart, and he's going to be sorely missed because they don't really have a lot of depth behind their main starting five of Murray, Harris, Barton, Millsap, and Jokic. I mean, hold you on, have guys.
Relax. Wilson Chandler had a decent year, like a decent NBA player year last year. And they do have a bit of depth. They have Trey Lyles, at least. Mason Plumlee is a good backup five. Come on. Relax.
Yeah, but with Isaiah Thomas's hip injury being a recurring issue and him probably not starting the regular season, you know, being able to play minutes on this Denver team, I think that, you know, with him out of the second unit, you're going to see guys like Murray and Harris especially get that much more of a workload, which I think they're okay with, obviously. But hopefully he'll come back sooner rather than later. So we'll see Denver, you know, having their full 10-man unit out there.
Yeah, these guys are young, man. Jamal Murray is 21. Gary Harris is 24. They can handle a load of minutes. Let's just go full on Tibbs here and launch these guys out for like 40 minutes a game.
They might have to be honest. And, yeah, you know, last year they were one game away, obviously, from making the playoffs, that basic, you know, that tiebreaker game essentially against Minnesota on the last day of the year.
That game hurt.
Just one of the best games of the season. But yeah, they missed Millsap for at least 3/5 of the year, if not 3/4 of the year. So with him coming back in the fold, and them getting Isaiah Thomas off the bench, whenever he does come back, they're just going to go full offense, obviously. And they're going to be a really hard team to play against, especially in the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, man. You got to use that advantage in the altitude. Kind of sucks for them, though, is that the NBA this year is cutting down on all the back-to-backs, all the 5 games in 6 nights or 4 and 5s. So other teams are going to come in a little bit more rested against Denver. But this team is still so young that they can just push the pace against anybody. Like, their oldest player is Paul Millsap. After that, it's like Mason Plumlee.
Yeah, and even though they didn't make the playoffs last year, the one good thing that came out of that season is they finally really handed over the reins to Nikola Jokic to run the entire offense. And even when Millsap came back, they basically solely relied on him at the high post to, you know, run the entire offense, get guys involved on back cuts and, you know, handoff plays, pick and roll. So I think that he's going to have a huge year this year, even bigger than he did last year. I think he realizes now that he has to score every single game, whereas the last, you know, two or three years especially, basically ever since he's been in the NBA, he's had games where he just disappears and just, you know, tries to get more guys involved, and they need his offense. They need him to average around 20 points a game and not be, you know, 11 one game and then 25 the next.
Yeah, the key for him is just pure consistency, right? For the, like, this whole team, it's pure consistency, though, because there's no one who's, you know, going to average a solid, like, 15 to 20 a game. Their most consistent performer is probably, like, someone like Gary Harris, who I think last year was probably around, what, like, 15 to 17 points a game?
Yeah, he's also criminally underrated. He's one of the best two-way players in the NBA, and he's super efficient. And him and Jokic are probably two of the best in terms of, like, pairing on how they work together on offense, especially in the NBA as well.
It's going to be, I think the biggest combination is going to have to be the Millsap-Jokic duo, right? Because these guys last year barely played together because, obviously, like you said, Millsap was injured for most of the season. And just when they were getting to their stride, the playoffs came around, right? Before that, just as they were hitting their stride with Millsap, he got hurt. So there was really no full comfort level between Millsap and the rest of the team. But especially with Jokic, it's two big guys having to play together. So there's going to be a lot of essentially running the same plays for each other, right? Or like them getting in each other's way. So there's a lot of little things like that that need to be worked out.
I just think they should just give the keys to Jokic again and just make Millsap a bit player. I think that he should just fit in around these guys and just be one of the guys instead of, you know, trying to be a player that he was 2 years ago.
But he's getting paid $30 million a year. There's no way.
Doesn't matter.
He's not a bit player. Okay.
No, I mean, a bit player in the sense that he's a role player. He's not going to be one of their main contributors on offense anymore. I think that they're better off going the route of just having Jokic as number one and then number two as well. And then after that, you have, you know, Jamal Murray and Gary Harris, you know, taking most of the offensive load, and Barton and, you know, Paul Millsap filling in around those guys. So their starting five is really good, obviously. But I really think they need to just focus in on Jokic being the guy on offense, especially. And defensively, they were 26th in the NBA last year, which should improve with Millsap being back in the fold as well.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously on offense, I think, again, once Isaiah Thomas comes back and, you know, putting up points off the bench with their second unit, it's something they really have last year. I think that, especially in Denver, they're just going to blitz teams. So that's going to be interesting to see as well.
Yeah, so their over-under this year is 47.5. Last year, they had 46 wins. I'm looking them for like 48, 49. One slide over. But obviously, I'm a homer.
Oh, I think the one guy we haven't talked enough about is Jamal Murray. So I think if he does make a leap and becomes, you know, a top 15, maybe around the top 10 in, you know, in terms of the point guard position, I could see them going over 50 wins.
Do you think Jamal Murray can surpass Mike Conley as a top 10?
Maybe not next year.
Yeah.
But maybe the year after. I mean, you know, obviously I'm a big Mike Conley fan and defense does matter, but obviously in Denver it doesn't really matter that much.
We're running so, gun.
Yeah, we're absolutely. But I mean, if as long as Murray stays consistent, you see that you know, dog that you saw in the last game of the season where he was, you know, basically the number one option once, you know, Minnesota started double teaming Jokic and not also just playing really physical with him. If he takes the reins as, you know, either 1A or 2 option on offense, and he can, you know, be consistent on offense, I think that they could go over 50 wins this year.
Yeah, he is a real dog out there. Like, that dude is hungry, and he shows up for big games. He doesn't really step down, like, when it really matters, right? Like, we remember last year, that big game against OKC. You already mentioned the game against Minnesota at the end of the year. This dude shows up.
Yeah, and you can see that he wants to be the main guy. Just even going back to the Canadian qualifiers for the Olympics about, I think it was a year before he became a rookie. He eventually started for that team, and I think he averaged like 17 or 18 points, led the team in scoring. So you can see that he wants it. And it's just a matter of if he's going to be able to make the right reads on offense and not be a guy that, you know, pulls up for bad shots early in the shot clock and rather, you know, is more patient on offense. and, you know, again, works well around Jokic and is able to hit open shots and just make the game more simple instead of trying to do too much, which he's done the first couple of years in his career.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that he came out of... He's a Kentucky guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they pulled him out of Kentucky as after his freshman year, where he was mostly a scorer. So then you bring him onto this team that, at that point, really didn't have a point guard. I guess their starting point guard was Jameer Nelson at the time. And then you just try to essentially just change his game so that he understands that he can connect with his teammates a little bit more on the floor. And just to make the ball flow consistently. You know what I mean? So he doesn't have to be so much of like a run-and-gun guy as strictly as that, but he can actually pass the ball, actually use his court vision rather than just chucking.
Yeah, and I think in the second half of the year, especially last year, I think he was starting to get that, and I think his chemistry with Jokic definitely improved as the season went on, and he wasn't forcing up as many bad shots early in the shot clock, especially from the mid-range, and he was working more so around Jokic to, you know, get easier looks on the perimeter by just using Jokic's gravity and getting wide open shots off cuts or just stepping back for three-pointers. And I think that honestly, like as you said, his best role is to be a scorer. And on this team, he doesn't really have to play point guard that much because Jokic handles the ball so often. Yeah. So if he does focus on just getting easier shots for himself and others, you can see a huge year for him. And I think he might average over 20 points a game next year.
Ooh, baby. I like that. I really like that.
So because I believe in Jamal Murray, I'm going to say this team wins 50 games next year. Or this year, sorry.
Let's go. Playoff team?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think the West is as strong as people say it is, especially after Minnesota's situation. At the bottom, anyway. So I think that I don't think that every team in the West that makes the playoffs is going to win 50 games. But,
no,
you know, that could be proven. That's a rarity, obviously. So
yeah. Let's move on to Minnesota, since you already mentioned it. It's kind of an eventful offseason. They, for some reason, they picked up Luol Deng, which is strange. Anthony Tolliver, kind of see it, I guess, because he's a shooter. They re-signed Derrick Rose, obviously, because it's Tibbs. And they gave Kat that big extension, 5 years, $190 million. And, oh yeah, I forgot, Jimmy Butler wants off the team. What
That's
is happening?
That's a big question. Man.
Jesus.
I feel sorry for this team. I mean, ever since, like, KG's my favorite player of all time, so I've always...
Ball?
No, Chris Paul's my favorite current player right now. KG's my favorite player ever. And obviously, I was a big Timberwolves fan growing up because of that. And I've been following this team forever. And obviously, they had the biggest playoff drought in the NBA in the last, I think it was like 15 or so years. And they finally got in the playoffs last year. And they looked very promising, obviously, with Jimmy Butler in the lineup. They were, you know, they're basically a 55-win team when he was playing. And they were the third seed until he got injured, obviously. And after that, I think once he came back, the chemistry wasn't the same. And obviously him and Kat, you could just see it on the court. Like, the chemistry wasn't there. And Butler, he's done this in the past as well. And in crunch time, he just tries to go one-on-one way too often. And in the Houston series especially, they just didn't use Kat in the way they should have. With Houston switching everything, they just had him stay in the corner as a three-point shooter because he's basically their best three-point shooter. He's one of the best shooting big men ever, obviously.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
He's also like one of the most talented players at the big man position maybe ever. And yet they didn't post him up against guys like Trevor Ariza and James Harden. It was crazy. This team needs a change in management for sure. And I think that's going to happen next offseason once they they're eventually going to trade Butler before probably mid-November, I would guess. And, you know, obviously they're not going to have a playoff type of season unless something magical happens and Kat becomes the best player in the NBA or something along those lines.
Damn, you think they let Butler just sit on the bench for that long? Because he's not going to play, right?
No, I mean, according to the reports, the owner wants him off the team as quickly as possible. It's Glenn Taylor and, you know, Tibbs and Scott Layden are trying to keep their jobs. So they're trying to find this magical package out there and trying to get, you know, at least two really good players or a young player and a veteran and a draft pick. And as we've seen in the past in NBA history, once a player demands a trade, their value goes from, you know, 90 cents in the dollar to 25 to 50 cents. So they'll be lucky to get a package like, you know, what's been reported with, you know, maybe Josh Richardson and a future second round pick, maybe another player. It doesn't seem like they're going to get that much for Jimmy Butler, and yet they traded so much for him with Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Chris Dunn.
Well, at the time, we thought that trade was amazing for Minnesota, right?
It was. Honestly, it was. As long as, you know, he re-signed, obviously. Or, but now that we're in this situation, it's different.
Even if he didn't resign, if there was just better chemistry. You know what I mean? Like, if he just played out this year and they actually played well together, it would have been worth the trade. But knowing what we know now, it's sort of just like, oh, man, what a waste. And then now with Tibbs wanting essentially the sun and the stars for Jimmy Butler, it's crazy. He wants to reduce his cap hold. He wants prospects. And he wants veteran players. For a guy who already wants off the team, there's absolutely no way you're getting this. Right? Like, he asked for Ben Simmons. Are you crazy? Like, this kid is... What's Ben Simmons? A top 20 player in the league right now? And he's 21? Are you insane, Tibbs? Who is going to do this deal with you?
Well, in negotiations, you try to ask for, you know, your best prospect, especially in the NBA, and then you sort of work your way down from there, and then you come to an agreement somewhere in the middle. So,
Magic for LeBron.
See how fast I hang up the phone?
Yeah.
With Butler, I don't know. It's a really sticky situation, obviously. And hopefully it gets resolved sooner rather than later, and they can get at least a young player out of it so they can start rebuilding around Cat again. At least they have Cat for another 5 years, and unfortunately they have Wiggins for another four. So I think that was the move that sort of handicapped them. Especially going forward and being able to get talent around these guys, especially with Cat in there. He's a generational talent, I think, and he's only going to get better. I mean, his defense isn't where it needs to be. He improved last year to where he had maybe a month and a half or 2 months where he was really good on defense. And I think that's only going to improve the next couple of years until he gets into his prime. And once that happens, he's going to be on the level near Anthony Davis, I think, and that's a guy you can build around.
That's a big move. You really think so, eh?
Cat is that good, man. Like, he averaged 25 and 10. He's legit.
Yeah, that's fair. He's only 22, right? Like, he's still really young. So I know I've hated on Cat in the past before, but at that age, man, like, I would take that in a heartbeat. Easily a top, 15, top 10 player right now?
Yeah, I'd say he's top 15. I think after this year, he's going to be top 10 for sure.
Yeah.
And he's going to get a lot of looks this year. And hopefully, you know, Thibodeau will actually adjust his offense to make him the number one guy now that Butler's gone, or going to be gone.
It's going to be Derrick Rose and Luol Deng.
Nothing would surprise me at this point. I mean, now that Joakim Noah's about to get, you know, bought out, it wouldn't surprise me if he becomes the next starting center for this team.
Oh my God, man. Tibbs is crazy.
Yeah, it seems like the NBA has sort of passed him by in terms of the switch in how the game has been played the last, well, I guess, ever since he was on Boston as an assistant coach, as a defensive coach. The game sort of passed him by, I think.
No, I'd say even during his time with the Bulls, right? Like, that was Tibbs' prime when Derrick Rose was in his prime. Towards the tail end of that, and then that 1 year that he took off, you remember there were reports of him going to different teams? You know, sitting in on the scouting or just talking to coaches, trying to essentially rebuild himself. It didn't really work that well. After that 1 year, everyone praised Tibbs for, you know, going out of his box, trying to be contemporary in the NBA, trying to be a player's coach. Not so much, man. We still have the exact same Tibbs.
Yeah, I mean, for all the reports that say he's basically a hermit that just stays in and, you know, reviews game tape or reviews all the analytics, he hasn't adjusted to the way the game is played nowadays and also how it's managed as well with minutes restrictions and trying to keep guys healthy throughout their career. I mean, all the Bulls guys that he's bringing in right now, their careers have been cut short or, you know, they're not playing the same way that they used to, obviously, and they can't produce as well as they used to, obviously, because Tibbs is playing them 38, 40 minutes a game on those teams you mentioned.
Yeah,
and even a guy like Carlos Boozer, I mean, he's out of the league at an early age, and he played a ton of minutes on those teams too. And I think it's more so to do with his defense, obviously, but he also had injury issues. And then Luol Deng almost died because Tibbs tried to play him when he had a spinal injury.
Oh, jeez, man. Yeah, this team, I don't think is going to make the playoffs. Their over-under is So it started off at 44.5 this summer. And then obviously the Butler stuff comes out and it drops to 40.5. Last year they had 47 wins and were the eighth seed. I can see like 40 wins.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on Wiggins and Towns, obviously. I think it has to do more so with Wiggins, though. I think that, you know, with him and his brother talking so much smack on social media and all these reports coming out about, you know, Wiggins not being comfortable with Jimmy Butler in the fold last year, this is the year where he has to take his game to the next level and prove that he's worth that max contract and prove that he can be like a second option on a good team. And he's going to have all the opportunities in the world because they don't have any depth behind him. So he's going to be playing 40 minutes a game under Tibbs.
He's got to prove that he has a heart.
This is how the conversation should have went with Andrew Wiggins and his brother when Andrew found out his brother sent out that tweet about hallelujah and all that, right? I'm Andrew Wiggins. Say, big bro, I don't think you should have sent that tweet out. Why you say that? Shit, because, you know, Jimmy Butler, man, he played with a lot of heart. He played hard. He played with a lot of heart. And I ain't got no heart. Now, you want to get on social media and talk about Jimmy? We lose him. My team ain't got no heart. Now, if you gonna take me to the Wizard and help me find a yellow big road to give me a heart, then cool. You can talk about Jimmy all you want. Because you know I ain't got no heart. So, shit, you going to take that back or tell me find a yellow big road and take me to the Wizard, man? Because, shit, I ain't got no heart at all. That's why Cleveland traded me. No bullshit. Nigga, you ain't got no heart. And your brother, you ain't gonna play basketball. Why you worry about that, bro? But like he said, keep that same energy.
Yeah, pretty much. Jeez, so man. Far, he's been a tin man, but hopefully somebody finds him a heart somewhere.
Oh, man, this team is so whack. Jeff Teague, obviously, is the starting point.
For now.
Yeah, he might get traded too, right?
If this turns into like a three-team
trade.
Yeah, I mean, you might end up trading him and then making, I guess, Derrick Rose would be the starting point guard, even though Tyus Jones is better than he is.
No way he would play Rose over Tyus Jones. Tyus Jones
He did last year.
Man, Tyus Jones is nice.
I'm sort of surprised that Phoenix hasn't traded like a high second round pick and trying to obtain Tyus Jones, because he's going to be gone if they decide to play Derrick Rose over him next year. Or they might just play them together again in spurts, but that lineup doesn't really work. So
no.
I think the funniest thing about this team is it's sort of come full circle in that, you know, if they don't actually get what they want for Butler, or if he just sits out for the first part of the regular season, I think Luol Deng is basically slated to be their starting three.
Oh, God. You're right.
Yeah, because they don't have anybody behind those two guys, the Wiggins, and I guess Deng in this case, because they have a rookie in Josh Okogie, who played well in the summer league, but Tibbs doesn't really like playing rookies, obviously, and then CJ Williams, who they signed to a two-way deal, I believe, and he played pretty well for the Clippers last year before he hurt himself, but
he ain't playing.
I can't see him playing over Deng in this case.
No, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow, I really hope they get something for Butler. Like anything. Literally just anything at this point. I just want this whole thing to be over with, just so we know where this team stands.
Yeah, most of the NBA would agree with you, I think, especially Minnesota and Glenn Taylor. They just want to get this over with.
Yeah. Minnesota's depressing as hell. Let's move on. It's too sad. I'm going to go to...
You're taking the over, you said? Or are you taking the under?
I don't know, man. It's at 40.5. I have them for 40. I think they're going to end up trading Butler for something that's not worth it. And they're obviously going to have to take on some garbage ass contracts to work with, and then 40 wins, slight under, I guess.
Yeah, I'm taking the under. I'm gonna say they win about 36 games.
Oh god.
And it won't be through any fault of Cat, because he's gonna have a monster year this year.
Yes, we get it. You love Cat. Jesus Christ. Let's go to OKC. How about that? They got your boy Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot, Abdel Nader, Mr. Hot Dog Nerlens Noel, and Dennis Schroeder. Resigned Raymond Felton, which I actually really like, Jeremy Grant, and threw a party for Paul George's resigning. And they lost out on Carmelo. And Nick Collison finally retired. It's not so bad of an offseason, I'd say.
Losing Nick Collison is huge, though.
That's true, but he's one of those guys who's probably going to stay in the organization. Let's be real.
Yeah, he's going to have a job forever.
Yo, he's going to be like Duncan practicing with them. Duncan still practices with the Spurs. I don't see why Nick Collison wouldn't just hang around.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, he could have been the starting power forward for this team, because it's hard to say who's going to be starting at this point at the four, I think. Based on them starting Andre Roberson at the two, you would think that Patrick Patterson would start and just try to give them some spacing. And you just bring Jeremy Grant off the bench in their super athletic second unit. So I think that's probably going to happen, where Patrick Patterson maybe plays, you know, 15 minutes a game as a starter, and then they sort of mix and match their lineups.
Yeah, he's really pushing for the start, too. Going out to the media and saying that he really wants a starting position and all that kind of stuff. I guess that would make more sense, though, because Jeremy Grant can't really shoot. So if you're going to have a guy like Roberson who can't really, who literally cannot shoot the ball, it would only make sense to have someone like Patterson who can at least stretch the floor. And then Roberson is the one who's cutting towards the net.
Yeah, and Russell Westbrook's supposed to be out for the first couple games of the year anyway, because he had a knee procedure about 2 weeks ago. So yo, he's scheduled to come back.
Does that trouble you? What, Westbrook is on his, like, what, fourth or fifth knee surgery now?
I don't think it's that many. I think it's been about two or three. Yeah, I think it's probably three in total. And
that's a lot still, though.
He seemed more athletic after he came back, though. So.
Which is like, this makes no sense whatsoever.
Which is why I'm not that worried about it. He's a cyborg.
Yeah, but cyborgs eventually break down.
Do they?
You ever see Dragon Ball Z? Android.
Well, at the same time, look at the Terminator franchise. It's, what is it, in the seventh movie? The Terminators don't die, man.
Ah, so is Terminator or Dragon Ball Z more realistic?
That's a tough one.
That's the question. Who's more like Russell Westbrook?
I see Russell Westbrook as the police cop, the cop in Terminator 2.
Oh, just literally can't be stopped.
Yeah, he just keeps coming. He just keeps coming, no matter what hits him.
Yeah, I guess that's better than, like, the fat white android from Dragon Ball.
Or whatever happened in the last couple movies that nobody watched. but this team is going to be watchable this year, so.
Yeah, they're pretty good. They've gotten a lot better during this offseason. They finally have another backup point guard in Schroeder. I really like Nerlens Noel. I think he's going to do really well on this team. As a guy who gets like 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, and he's a guy that can only really play center as well. So I think that, yeah, like you said, with him playing maybe, you know, 15 to 18 minutes a game behind Steven Adams and playing with Dennis Schroeder, who's extremely fast and probably going to be able to get him a bunch of alley-oop dunks and, you know, handoffs and such.
That's amazing.
He'll be pretty effective as a secondary center. I think that I was sort of surprised that he didn't go to a team where he could have, you know, possibly started or played at least 20 minutes a game. Even like a team like the Lakers, who only really has one center right now, I thought that he would go to them, to be honest.
I actually think that OKC is probably a better fit for him, though, because he started off in Philly, didn't really have a veteran other than, you know, beat up Elton Brand at the time. And then he goes to Dallas, where there's no real veteran big man at that point, right? Tyson Chandler was already gone, and there's only Dirk. But you're not going to listen to Dirk when you're a young, athletic guy, and Dirk is in his late 30s at that point, only shooting threes. You know what I mean? I think going to OKC, he's got dogs in Russell Westbrook, and Steven Adams is just there, ready to teach as a quote-unquote. Well, he's a veteran now, I guess. He's 28.
You mean he's going to be there to kick his ass?
Yeah. Like, you need a hard ass for this guy. And there's also nothing to do in OKC. He can't just party all the time like in Dallas. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's New Orleans Noel. He's already trashed two houses, so I wouldn't be surprised if he trashed another four.
Four? I don't think so, man. I think this is exactly what he needed. Just, like, a team with a really strong culture. I'm not saying that Dallas doesn't have that. I'm saying that this team's culture is more tight-knit.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that he fits in well with that second unit, with him and Grant most likely coming off the bench behind Patterson. The thing that you want from your bench unit is a lot of energy and guys that can come in and change the game. And if you bring in, you know, Schroeder with those two guys, you're just going to speed the game up to a whole nother level. And their defensive versatility is going to be ridiculous this year with adding Nerlens Noel to that unit. And plus, you're getting Roberson back. And they're starting five last year, despite having Carmelo in it. Obviously, the Ewing theory, I think, is also in place for this year for them.
Wow.
In that, so the Ewing theory is when Patrick Ewing was on the New York Knicks, I think it was 1999-2000 team, the team that made the finals, and he got injured, and then Marcus Camby came in. They played way better without him. So that became a thing, and then he kept going to different teams, and obviously those teams didn't play particularly well.
That was at the end of his career, though.
It's true.
Let's give him some props here. That was literally at the end of his career.
But the point is, I think with them losing Melo, they've actually improved in not having him on the floor, especially for defensive purposes. So they have a lot of different lineups they can go to in crunch time, too. I think that they're going to have to experiment a lot with Russell Westbrook playing with Dennis Schroeder. And I think ultimately, against teams that don't have a guy on the wing that can really punish them, like, you know, KD, LeBron types, like the top five swingmen at a small forward, essentially, they can go to lineups with Russell Westbrook and Dennis Schroeder, and then have Paul George guard the main guy for the other team. But in situations where you have multiple guys that you need to defend the perimeter, you may not play Schroeder in those lineups. You probably play Roberson. So, and going back to last year, when Roberson actually played, they had the number one net rating on defense with that starting five with Russ, Roberson, Melo, George, and Adams. So even though everyone hates on Roberson because he's probably the worst offensive player in the NBA, he makes up for it in the other end, and he makes them an elite defensive team.
Yeah, his defense more than makes up for it. It's like having Tony Allen. So who are we projecting to start for this team? Westbrook, Roberson, George? Oh, you said Patterson and Adams.
Yeah.
Their bench is so much deeper than it was last year. Remember last year, like, everyone just sat on the bench instantly, but now you have Noel, Schroeder, Grant. Abrinas is still there, who's just a knockdown shooter. I mean, this team is a lot deeper. They could really do some damage this year.
Yeah, and Jeremy Grant has improved every year that he's been in the NBA as well, so you can't forget him. Like, he had a really strong playoffs, and in the lineups that he played against Utah, OKC was a huge plus, and yet they decided to play Melo, you know, 25 to 30 minutes a game still, instead of just giving the hand, you know, giving the keys over to Grant.
Yeah, what a bad idea.
Yeah, that was, you know, they probably could have won that series if they played Grant instead of Melo.
So, yeah, maybe.
I mean, like, Dennis Schroeder definitely has a chance to win Sixth Man of the Year this year. And in having a guy that can consistently come in and change the pace of the game and, you know, provide 10 to 15 points every night, that's huge for this team because they haven't really had that.
Their over-under is 48.5. Last year they had 48 wins. What do you think? I'm liking the over.
Yeah, I like the over as well. As long as, you know, Russell Westbrook comes back within the first five games of the year and they don't have too many injury issues, this team should definitely go over.
Even if he's out for, say, like 2 weeks at the beginning of the season, I still like the over. Because his between Schroeder and Felton, they're pretty good backups. Schroeder was a starter last year. Obviously not for a good team with the Hawks, but he's a pretty decent point guard.
And then but when you start him over, you know, if you start him in place of Westbrook,
it's a significant drop-off, obviously. And then the bench is obviously shallower. But
and your defense won't be as good. Plus, you have to figure out if Patrick Patterson fits in this lineup, too. If he's been so inconsistent the last, well, I guess ever since he's been in the NBA. So if he's not knocking down shots and Schroeder's off his game, they're going to get killed. So
kind of a hot take, but not really. Patrick Patterson's not that good of a shooter.
No.
Like, his whole career has been designed around him being a shooter. But not, like, he's not actually that good at it. He had one hot year in Toronto, and that was it. And then sort of just fell off right after.
Yeah, and even during that year, his quantity of shots wasn't that high. He didn't really average a lot of three-point attempts, but the ones that he took, he hit. But last year, he was a disaster for OKC.
Yeah, over the past few years, he shot around 40%. Not great. Not like not awful, but not great. His hottest year in Toronto, he averaged 45%.
From three or in general?
In general.
Okay.
From three, last year he averaged 38.
30, really?
38, 37, 36. And then his highest was 44.
Yeah. How many shots per game did he average last year?
2.1. He hit 0.8. Yeah,
cool. He's going to have to make sure to get that total way up if he's going to be able to starting lineup, because they're going to be laying off him a lot and trying to focus on Westbrook and Paul George, especially with Roberson in there too.
Oh, of course. So we're both liking the over for this team, right?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, they've had a good history in terms of injuries with their main guys. Westbrook, Paul George, and Adams don't get injured very often, so.
All right. Well, hopefully they do well, because I'm pretty high on this team right now, at least. We'll see once the season starts.
Yeah, and plus they were 10th in defensive efficiency last year, and they were, I think, in the top five when Roberson played. So I can see that definitely going up.
Well, yeah, with guys like Steven Adams, Roberson, and Paul George, you better be a top five defense.
Yeah, for sure. And again, they have Grant and Noel off the bench as well, so they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs especially. I think that even though they might win around 50 games or maybe even a little bit less if they have some injury concerns in the playoffs, no matter who they face, they're going to be tough to beat.
Oh, yeah. They could actually... Can this team put up a fight against the Warriors?
I think they have the guys to do it. They have a very switch-heavy lineup, and Adams has had a lot of success against the Warriors, obviously, with their small lineups. And he's been a guy that Draymond Green hasn't been able to really keep off the boards when they actually go with the death lineup with Draymond at the five. So this team could definitely provide a real tough matchup for Golden State. And then also Golden State can't pick on Melo when they do play them now. So he can play Grant and have him switch on the perimeter, and that could cause a lot of their, fix up a lot of their problems, obviously.
They can just pick on Russell Westbrook instead. It's fine.
Yeah, his laziness on defense.
Exactly. Just catch him falling asleep.
Yep.
It's done in the past. All right, let's move on to Portland. This team is a mess, dude. They picked up Seth Curry. They picked up Nick Stauskas for some weird reason.
Stauskas?
Janitor, Stauskas?
Yes.
Waitress, Stauskas? Okay, Stauskas. By the way, I'm paying off you. Stauskas? Stauskas? You have my payroll. Don't embarrass me. Stauskas?
We gotta talk.
Stauskas?
And then they re-signed Jusuf Nurkić. So, pretty good. They lost Pat Connaughton, who's actually a really good shooter. Ed Davis, who was a huge locker room guy, and is going to be very missed. And Shabazz Napier, who was obviously backing up Damian Lillard. This team is just a mess. Like, they are so locked by their salaries that there's nothing that they can do right now.
Yeah, Neil O'Shea, the general manager, made a big mistake. I think it was two off seasons ago in re-signing Myers Leonard to that big contract and then obviously giving Evan Turner $70 million over, I think it was 4 years, nobody else is offering that contract.
Remember when he matched the Allen Crabbe contract?
Yeah, that as well.
Jesus Christ, man. This guy is just so obsessed with his guys. So now you have obviously Lillard and McCollum. Evan Turner is making almost $18 million this year. Nurkić is around 12, so that's good. Mo Harkless is at $10.8 million this year. Next year at 11.5. Myers Leonard is at 10.5 this year. Next year, 11.2. What are these contracts?
See, this is the team that should have taken the chance on Boogie. They should have let Nurkić go, and they should have just played Zach Collins as their starting center and just gave him all the experience that he could handle, essentially, the first part of the year. And then once Boogie comes back in early January or whenever it's going to be, then you have a lineup that's really dangerous and a top three that can basically rival anybody's, besides the Warriors, obviously, in the NBA with Dame, CJ, and Boogie. But they decided to stand pat for whatever reason and just be a team that's going to be in the lower echelon of the playoffs, playoff rankings, whether it's going to be between the 6th seed and maybe the 8th seed, maybe the 10th seed.
Yeah, they may not make the playoffs, man.
Yeah, with Minnesota being out of the picture, I think they have a higher chance now of making the playoffs, but those guards just don't get injured as well. So I think those two have just found a way to work together, and they're a really good 1-2 duo, obviously. But in the playoffs, you need a third guy, obviously, that you can count on. And Aminu was actually pretty good in the playoffs last year, but that didn't really matter because New Orleans just said, go ahead and try to score 25 points a game. And you definitely need that third guy that you can count on. So I just don't think they have that.
Aminu is a solid, fourth or fifth option. He's going to be really good on Houston next summer. You know what I mean?
That wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
Or on Golden State, whichever he decides to go to.
He's going to get paid, though, for sure.
Oh, hell yeah.
He's the perfect kind of forward that teams want nowadays that can shoot the three and play multiple positions and rebound the ball. So
yeah, solid 3-and-D player. I don't think that Portland was really in contention to get Boogie this summer, right? According to Boogie, at least, no one really called him except the Warriors, which is a load of crap. But I don't think that they were really ever a contender to get him. I think he was set on going to someone who would win and that he can just chill with until January or February at this point, which is obviously Golden State.
Well, CJ McCollum said that he tried to reach out to him when he was talking about it on his podcast. So that's something, but obviously he's not the GM. So, but I definitely think they should have at least inquired about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing what his injury history is and seeing how his progression is so far and seeing when he's going to come back. Cause I think they could have, you know, played a month without him and still treaded water.
Oh, easily.
And, yeah, I mean, at least been in the playoff picture. And then once he comes back again, come playoff time, those three together would be really tough to play against.
Yeah. Well, they'll just have to settle for Zach Collins and Yusuf Nurkic.
Yeah, and I mean, Nurkic, he had a pretty disappointing year last year based on his expectations going into the year. Because the year before that, once he first got traded to Portland, he fit in really well, and he was a great role guy with CJ and Dame running the pick and rolls, getting into the paint and scoring on those little dump-off passes. And his defense actually improved last year, but overall, just offensively, he just didn't step up to the plate, and he wasn't the third cog that they needed him to be.
Yeah, so he went from averaging 15.2 points per game the year before to 14.3 last year. He's close to, like, a 15-10 guy. He had 9 rebounds last year, which is pretty good. But, yeah, offensively, like, he hasn't really grown since he got into the league. Or at least for the last, like, 2 or 3 years. Right? Remember when he came in, he was a defensive anchor for Denver. He was staring guys down. He was talking trash. Like, he blocked Marc Gasol and literally just stared at him for, like, 5 seconds while the rest of the play was going on. And then got to Portland, had that crazy half season where he just dominated everyone. And then last year it was just chill. Like, way underperformed compared to what everyone thought he would do. Like, we all had expectations of him improving significantly. But he sort of just, like, stayed stagnant.
Yeah, and that's why the loss of Ed Davis is going to matter so much to this team. I think that, you know, Zach Collins is going to really have to step up to the second year and replace that production and be consistent this year. He showed flashes last year. Like, he was actually pretty good in the playoffs as well when he got the opportunity. He showed that he wasn't scared playing against Anthony Davis, and he was taking the shots that presented themselves, and he was playing really hard, especially on the boards. So I think that in that sense, the younger guys off the bench especially are going to have to step up and step into roles where they have to produce, or else this team might even be a lower seed than the 10th seed, because most of their bench is younger guys because they lost so many of their veteran players. I think that you're going to have Caleb Swanigan playing minutes behind Al-Farouq Aminu at the 4, and then obviously Seth Curry is coming back from his injury last year, so he's going to play a huge role off the bench for them, I think. And Wade Baldwin's going to floppy play behind Dame, and he's an unproven player as well. So you have a lot of question marks on the bench especially. And this team is not particularly good on offense either overall. I mean, the two guards obviously score a ton of points, but beyond them, as we saw in the Orleans series, once you're able to sort of trap them and force the other guys to do things they're not really comfortable in doing, the Portland offense sort of shuts down.
Yeah, man. Evan Turner. Good for him for getting that money, but damn, he's really locked them up. He had that one good postseason with the Celtics and then got paid off of it. And then he's just underperformed ever since getting to Portland. Man.
Yeah. And honestly, the other oddity with this team is that they were 8th in defense last year overall. And I can definitely see them, you know, taking a big step back on that end of the floor with so many younger players coming in off the bench.
How the hell were they 8th in defense?
That was one of the biggest question marks in the NBA last year. They were top 5 for a good portion of the year somehow. And most people, you know, obviously said that Dame and CJ couldn't work together, and, you know, their defense was terrible the year before that. And somehow they got up to 8th, and offensively they were 16th. So it's sort of a switch of what you think they would have been.
Was Aminu playing all 5 positions?
I don't know.
That makes no sense, man. So their over-under is 42. Last year they had 49 wins somehow. This is insane.
Oh, they had 49 wins because a lot of the West had injuries, obviously, with Millsap and, you know, Jimmy Butler, and there was a lot of injuries around the West.
Yeah. I'm picturing them for, around 42. 42 is pretty bang on, actually. I think they're like a 500 team, 41. Because this team is not deep. Like, they have... I still cannot get over Evan Turner and Mo Harkless being on this team and getting paid so well.
Yeah, it's probably the most overpaid small forward position in the NBA, at least.
Oh, yeah.
And I like Mo Harkless. I mean, at $10 million a year, it's not that bad. because he actually plays pretty well when he does play. He's had some injury concerns the last couple of years, but he hasn't really been consistent in terms of shooting the three-point shot. I mean, the year before last, he had that clause in his contract where he had to reach a certain threshold. I think it was around 37% or so.
Yeah, it wasn't even that high. That's the funniest part. It was like 38 tops.
Yeah, then the last five games of the regular season, that became a story in the media, and he just stopped shooting three-pointers, which is the funniest thing.
Wow. You know how we just said 37, 38? 35%.
Wow.
That year, he averaged 35.1% from three. Last year, he averaged 41.5%, which is really good.
Yeah, but again, he's not a high-volume player, though, so he doesn't take a lot of the shots that are there. He's more selective, which is fine, but again, with team as is, with a 16th-ranked offense, you need guys like that to just bomb away, sort of like what Houston does with their role players.
Yeah, you can't have guys always looking for the perfect shot at this point, because if you only have two offensive players, you need other guys to just... Sometimes you just need chuckers, realistically, you know what I mean? Like, you just need shots to go up and just rely on volume at some point or another. And this is one of those teams.
Yeah, and that's a role that Seth Curry could fill, because the year before last, before he got injured, he was actually pretty good in Dallas, and he was taking the shots that were there when he had opportunities. So he could be a guy that plays, you know, 30 minutes off the bench, and you might even see three-guard lineups with him, CJ, and Dame together.
Wow, imagine that. Three-guard with Aminu and either Nurkic or Zach Collins? Jesus Christ, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I think their offensive rating is definitely going to go up this year, but their defense is definitely going to fall off for sure. So I can see them being at around, as you said, 40 to 41 wins. And best case scenario, if their younger players do develop with, you know, Caleb Swanigan and Zach Collins playing good minutes off the bench, I could see them being up towards 45 wins, but I can't see them being better than the sixth seed.
Yeah, I see them at an eighth seed tops. Because I think that the Lakers are going to go somewhere between the 5 to 6 seed, probably the 6, and then the Nuggets are going to work their way into the playoffs as well. So I think this team actually falls off, to be honest.
Yeah, I think they'll be fighting for the 8 seed for sure.
Such a shame, man. I hope that they can get Lillard and McCollum some help in the future. But even next year and the year after that, they're pretty clogged up. Most of the guys don't become free agents until the 2020 offseason.
Honestly, though, I know this hasn't really been talked about that much, or at all, really.
No.
But this could be a destination for Jimmy Butler. I think that if they want to go in a different direction, they want to spice things up, you might look at trading, you know, CJ McCollum for Jimmy Butler and just try to have Damian Lillard and Butler play together.
That would be insane. I don't see that happening at all.
No, but I mean, if you want to mix it up and have a bigger backcourt.
I don't think they want to mix it up, though. That's the issue.
Yeah.
They by doing nothing this offseason, they've already shown that they don't want to mix it up.
At the same time, though, you got to keep Dame happy, and his contract is going to be ending in the next 2 years, I believe. So
no, they got it until 2021. Same with CJ. Yeah. These guys are locked in. Like, they can't go anywhere unless they request a trade. And then even then, we'll see, obviously. But it isn't. Neither of those guys spark me as guys who will demand a trade.
No, but I think eventually you're going to hear murmurs of them wanting to either have the team improve or look to be traded somewhere else. And their value is going to be the highest when they're not in their expiring year, but the year before that, which will be in 2 years. And, you know, making a move like this to hopefully improve the team, I think that could, you know, place them in the right direction. They could take another step in the right direction by doing so, because Butler is a better player than McCollum. And you'd be improving your defense, which is already obviously pretty good from last year.
Yeah, yes. I don't know. I don't see it. I don't see them making that kind of rash decision.
I don't either, but I think that
it'd be
a better team if they did it,
yeah,
for sure.
It'd be super interesting. But yeah, I don't see it. Let's get out of here, man. What a depressing team. Let's get out of depressing Portland. I want to go somewhere with an optimistic future. Let's go to Utah. The last team, obviously. They drafted somewhat controversial figure in Grayson Allen. They re-signed Dante Exum, Derek Favors, and Raul Neto. And they didn't really lose much. They lost out on Jonas Repko.
So, yeah, Utah is stacked this year. I mean, they brought all these guys back, and they already have a really strong starting five with Rubio, Mitchell, Ingles, Favors, and Gobert. And I think Dante Exum is going to take another step this year in becoming a solid NBA player. And he was good last year, too, when he did play. And he showed that he's probably one of the only guys in the NBA that can keep up defensively with James Harden. And this team overall just has so many different parts they can put in when certain guys are struggling. I mean, especially on the wing, they have so many guys on the wing. I mean, Alec Burks is going to be a third stringer, and wow, Grayson Allen is probably going to be a fourth stringer at the shooting guard position, because you have Thabo Sefolosha coming back from getting beat up by the cops in New York.
Sorry. Injury report, police brutality.
Yeah, seriously. Oh, so, I mean, he's probably going to come back and play, you know, 15, 20 minutes a game off the bench. And Alec Burks, who played really well in the playoffs against Houston, is probably not going to play that many minutes, obviously. And Rubio is coming back from injury as well. So Mitchell's going to take another step in his development. He's already extremely good as a rookie.
Yeah.
And Gobert was injured for, I think, 20 or 30 games last year when Utah wasn't expected to make the playoffs. And then once he came back, they had that huge run. I think they won, you know, 30 out of 38 games or something like that. So when he's in the lineup and you have Mitchell, who's slated to be one of the next superstars coming up in the NBA, obviously, and you have guys around them that just fit their system. I mean, their coaching has been absolutely amazing the last couple of years. This team is going to win a lot of games, and they're going to be an extremely, extremely tough out in the playoffs. I think that they probably, outside of maybe Houston, if they make a move, they have the roster that can really compete with the Warriors.
Whoa. I guess you're right.
In the Western Conference.
Yeah.
In the Western
Conference. Of course, of course. They are so deep. It's incredible. And they still have Jay Crowder, who has apparently shed like 15 pounds. They have all the right guys at the right places to, like you said, go against Golden State, essentially. They have a really strong perimeter. Their big men are pretty traditional big men, right? Between Gobert and Favors, and that they're both going to dominate the boards. Gobert is obviously the defensive player of the year, so he's a monster inside. I mean, imagine this team going against a death lineup. Gobert's got like 6 inches on Draymond already.
Yeah, and their injuries, again, this team, it sort of helped them that Thabo Sefolosha was out last year, because you had a guy like Royce O'Neal come into the fold, and he really stepped in and played a prominent role, especially in the playoffs. He was really consistent as a rookie, and he reminds me a lot of how Wes Matthews came up in the Portland system, and that I think Royce O'Neal was an undrafted rookie, if I'm not mistaken, and yeah, he really worked really hard to get into training camp with the team, and then Utah obviously signed him to a contract. He wasn't really expected to play at all, and then last year he's starting at the three for Utah in the playoffs, and even though his shot is a bit slow, he just plays the right way, and he does everything that's asked of him by the coaching staff. And going back to your comment about their big guys, they do play a traditional lineup in the starting lineup, and a guy like Favors has changed his game a lot in order for them to fit as a starting four and five with him and Gobert. Last year, they made it work because Favors improved his perimeter shot a lot, and they went more so to like a motion-based system where they had a lot of dribble handoffs, and you know, Joe Ingles, I think, was the biggest benefactor of that motion-based system, because anytime he tries, you know, he basically gets an angle on a player, he's able to get in the lane and make plays, and his three-point shooting is obviously extremely potent. And again, this team just has so many options. We haven't talked about Rubio yet, and he was very good last year, despite being on a team where it looked like they had too many guys that really weren't able to shoot. And he changed his game a lot in last year as well. Just going back to, you know, talking about Favors and a bunch of different guys on this team that has really adopted just being more of an offensive player, in that he has to be more aggressive on offense. He was taking the shots over there, something he didn't do.
What do you think Joe Ingles shot from three last year?
I would say around 43% on around 5 or 6 attempts a game.
Oh, that's really close, actually. 44% on 6 attempts.
Yeah.
That is so good. This guy is a straight-up knockdown shooter. And he really caused a lot of issues against OKC during the playoffs last year, right? Like, they really had no idea how to defend him. Because he obviously can dribble a bit. He can penetrate. And then, similar to everyone on Utah, he makes the right dish. It's perfect. Like, this team plays so well together as a system.
And we obviously all know that Donovan Mitchell, you know, young Dwayne Wade, he's arguably the rookie of the year, depending on how you want to look at the definition of the term. This team is so well organized, and Coach Snyder has done a really good job with them. Like, everyone knows their role, no one deviates from the game plan, and defensively, it just is executed perfectly.
Yeah, this team reminds me a lot of the old Spurs, in that everyone just accepts their role, and everyone seems to get better as the season rolls along, even especially the role players, really. I mean, Joe Ingles went from, you know, a journeyman who couldn't get a contract to a guy that was, you know, a pretty consistent three-point shooter about 2 or 3 years ago, but didn't play a whole hell of a lot of minutes. And then last year, he basically became not one of the best small forwards in the NBA, but he's probably top 10 now, and nobody ever saw that coming.
Yeah, that really came out of nowhere. And they were able to rehab Jay Crowder after the whole LeBron fiasco in Cleveland, right? Like, he went into Cleveland, everyone thought he was going to have the best year of his career because he was going to get open shots all the time. And it never really fit with LeBron because he just had to literally stand in the corner and wait. But he's the kind of guy that if you get him involved in the offense, you just move the ball through him. He's so much more engaged. And you saw it instantly as soon as he got to Utah. He was engaged on defense. He was knocking down corner threes consistently. And he was a huge performer in the playoffs.
Yeah, and he's the perfect stretch four off the bench as well.
Yeah.
I mean, with him coming in off the bench in situations where maybe the favors Gobert lineup doesn't fare well against a smaller starting unit, you can just bring in Crowder and have him play with either one of those guys, and you're not really going to lose a beat. And also, as you mentioned, with him, you know, coming into Utah, with their offense as it is, they just get everyone involved and everyone feels a part of the team. And that's part of Coach Snyder's philosophy, that if everyone touches the ball, they'll feel more involved. And then defensively, they'll try harder, which I think if anyone who's played basketball knows that if you actually are involved in the offense, it does make you play better and with more energy as well.
Oh, it totally works, man. All right. So for this team, we've got an over under of 49.5. That's pretty high. I think most people are projecting them to be third or fourth in the West?
Yeah, I would say so. I think most people are expecting to be the third seed or the fourth seed, depending on what you think about the Lakers, I guess. Or OKC, really.
OKC. More OKC than the Lakers, let's be real.
Based on the over-unders throughout the summer, a lot of people think the Lakers are going to be a 2 or 3 seed.
Yeah, let's relax here. LeBron's going to lead them to 60 wins next year. You know what I
mean? Yeah.
Let's calm down, guys.
So how many games they win last year? It's around 48 or 50?
They had 48 last year.
Yeah, 48 wins last year, and Gobert missed at least 30 games, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm going way over. I'm going to take them at 55 wins this year.
Hot damn, 55, eh?
53 to 55. I know the West is really tough this year, but they have a huge home court advantage. I mean, their fans are ridiculous. And they have an identity. So on the road, if their offense isn't rolling, they can fall back on their second-ranked defense. And offensively, they were 15th last year, and I can only see that going up with Mitchell improving, and him and Rubio were actually really good together, which is a big surprise because nobody really thought either guy could shoot coming in. So
yeah, it's true. Gobert missed 26 games last year.
Yeah.
And the year before that, he played in 81 out of 82 games. So, I don't know. He's not going to be a guy who's consistently hurt, is all I'm trying to say. He seems to be pretty reliable.
Yeah, and he had a freak injury last year, too, with, according to Gobert anyway, Dion Waiters purposely backed into his knee.
Yeah, I don't want to get into that part. I'm not throwing Dion under the bus, you know what I mean? 48, yeah, I can see them going for 51. I can see the over easily because they're one of the teams who's brought back the exact same team, except everyone is assuming to get better. Most of the guys are still pretty young. Mitchell is obviously going into his second year, but like you said, Gobert is what, 25 this year? 26?
I believe so. He's going to win Defensive Player of the Year this year.
Again?
Again.
Wow. You don't think Kawhi will? Come on, man.
Kawhi's going to win the MVP. It's hard to win the MVP and the DPOY in the same year.
Oh, my bad. My bad. He's not Michael Jordan. My apology.
He plays like him.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Utah, I could see 51. Gobert, I could see winning it again. I could see him getting DPOY again. I guess it really depends on how they perform this year. But 51, easy. Put it in the bank.
Yeah, and depending on the seedings going into the playoffs, if they can avoid Golden State Warriors up until the conference finals, I can definitely see them being better than Houston in the playoffs this year, too.
Oh, yeah. they're just going to do the same thing they did to OKC last year, and Melo's just going to be played off right off the floor.
Yeah.
Except it might be Harden this year.
Well, they tried that against Harden, too. Like, they try to post him up a lot, which is not the best way to attack him. No. The best way to attack him is just have Mitchell go straight at him from the perimeter. So,
really? I was going to say you run cuts against him. Make him play off-ball defense, because he falls asleep a lot. He's gotten better, obviously, but he's still, like, very lackadaisical on D.
True. And Utah does run a system like that as well, with a lot of dribble handoffs and, you know, off-the-ball actions, so... But yeah, I can definitely, I mean, if Rubio didn't get injured last year, they probably would have taken Houston to at least six games, and the whole series would have switched because you'd have one more really reliable rotation guy. And now Utah's coming back not only with him, but obviously Tabo Sapolosha and improved Dante Exum and Mitchell, who's going to, again, probably take another step in his development. And then you have Gobert, who's, we haven't really talked about that much, but again, he's probably, again, the best defensive player in the league and a guy that can almost defend any type of action. He's gotten better on the perimeter as well, even though he's 7'1", 7'2". Yeah. He moves his feet pretty well. And obviously in the paint, teams just cower away from taking, you know, those little floaters, whip shots against him. So
yeah, everyone would.
Yeah.
Look at the guy. He's huge. And they have those fire home jerseys. Literally those jerseys that are on fire.
Yeah, their jerseys are really nice. Yeah. And they have the old school Karl Malone jerseys, the circa 1992 jerseys coming back this year too.
The purple with the mountain backdrop, and that's an amazing jersey.
I'm all in on Utah.
Yeah, I think we both are, man. Easy.
Let's get a Utah-Toronto finals this year.
Woo! What up? I don't even know how to respond.
The finals that nobody outside of those two places will watch. Well, I guess Canada and Utah anyway.
No, you're right. Toronto and Utah. It's going to be like the 04 finals all over again. Jeez.
Let's do it.
All right, well, I guess that's it for the Northwest Division preview. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. Remember to rate and subscribe. Find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Tell your friends and family to hit us up. Obviously, Instagram and Twitter. And until next time, peace.